are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
And it's kind of scary to think with Kenny Britt that he hit his first 1,000-yard receiving with the Rams.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Oh, yeah, sure. They score a lot of points, right?
Yeah, they score 20 a game, to be exact.
Well, might as well just roster them all.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
It can really kind of hamper your potential just because, for whatever reason, when he plays away, he just doesn't do as well.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits football podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennan. I'm joined this afternoon by Mr. Eric Mackey. How are you doing, sir?
I'm feeling strangely fine. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing well. Why strangely?
It's probably lack of sleep. That's probably why I'm feeling all right.
So you're feeling delirious. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Okay, so that would explain why you may want to take a kicker in the first round of the mock draft we're going to do later, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. They score a lot of points, right?
Yeah, they score 20 a game, to be exact.
Well, might as well just roster them all.
Please do that. I really want to see you do that in a mock draft. That would be the greatest thing ever. Oh, we see that run on kickers going in the first round.
Get them while they're hot.
Exactly. Eric, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached before we start the podcast?
I can be reached on Twitter at Mackey671FWFB.
And I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. Eric, today we're going to be doing a division preview. We're going to talk about the AFC North, and we're going to be starting off with the Baltimore Ravens. So, first off, what are your thoughts on Joe Flacco coming into this year? Is he someone who you can consider as a quarterback too? In certain leagues, or is he someone that you're probably not really going to try to acquire in a 2QB league?
Unless I'm absolutely forced to, I'm not really going to touch Flacco this year. He's really kind of been on that bubble for even QB2 and two quarterback leagues. I mean, the big benefit with him is the deep ball, but you know, with the back injury that he's had, sidelining him for 6 weeks, I'm not really excited about taking a quarterback with disc issues in his back. So I'd rather just pass on him and go with somebody that may have a little bit more upside.
Yeah, I'm avoiding Flacco, and even if he wasn't hurt, I still think I would be avoiding him. I just don't see a ton of upside, and I don't see a ton of offensive weapons to help carry him into a solid quarterback two level. I think it's nice that they were able to add Jeremy Maclin. You know, I think it will be a better offense for him than the Chiefs. But, you know, I did think that he would have been more valuable last year than he was. But they still retain Mike Wallace. They have Terrence West and Danny Woodhead. It just would be nice to have one solid offensive player that they could rely on and that would be able to produce a lot of fantasy value. But they don't really have that. So that's why I'm avoiding Joe Flacco.
Yeah, there's just no level of consistency there, which, you know, wasn't really, if you're looking at kind of a boom bust, I mean, he definitely fits that trend, but you can't really have that if you're looking for something on a low-end quarterback, too. You kind of need a little bit more of a consistent player if you're, I guess, kind of punting that position.
Exactly. Why don't we move over into the wide receivers, and we're going to be talking a little bit about Mike Wallace and Jeremy Maclin. Where do you see their fantasy value for this season, and who of the two are you more excited on?
Well, I think kind of what you're going to see from Wallace, assuming Flacco stays healthy, is pretty much what he did last year. You're going to get those games that he'll be able to abuse bad cornerbacks and just sprint down the field on them and get that deep ball, but he's still not going to give you much more than that. Maclin, I probably have a little bit more hope for as far as having a little bit more consistency just because he's a lot better route runner overall, but I'm not, I mean, for me, both of them are kind of wide receiver four options at the best case scenario. But neither guy right now are ones that I'm really kind of trying to actively target, even for a depth basis. There's kind of guys out there that are in that similar range that I'd rather take a shot on that are kind of the devil I don't know.
Yeah, for me, I'm higher on Mike Wallace than I am on Jeremy Maclin. But I have them both in the 40s. I have Wallace ranked at 43, and I have Jeremy Maclin ranked at 47 coming into the season as of right now. And I don't think there's a lot that's really going to make me change that order. I do think that Wallace is the person who, like you said, is able to at least burn some bad corners and at least make some yards as a result of that and maybe get a cheap score or two. And I do think that he's able to still have around 100-plus targets because there's just such a lack of offensive weapons. I mean, they lose Dennis Pitta, and he led the team in targets last year, so you have to assume that a big majority of those 119 targets are probably going to go to Wallace now. Maybe 50 of those targets could go to Wallace. And you would have to assume that the Steve Smith loss is probably going to go to Jeremy Maclin, and maybe some of the Dennis Pitta will also go to him. So it does make sense that the person who probably gets the most target share is Mike Wallace. And I think that that's why I have him slightly higher, but he's still a flex play for me given the offensive situation.
Yeah, and the only other guy that may factor into it, but he's basically been injured since they drafted him, is Rashad Perriman. But kind of at this point, I mean, he hasn't been healthy for 3 years. If he ever actually does get consistent play, I mean, he's kind of Mike Wallace light to some extent. So depending on what happens with him, if he ever gets on the field, he might be a guy to watch. But for now, he's not really on my radar much.
I agree. I do think that if he is able to be healthy, he would be a solid number three for the team, though. And I think that as a result of that, he could be someone who could work his way up into flex play consideration if he is able to get consistent and he's able to stay healthy. I think he could end up being the best wide receiver out of this group, but he needs to be able to stay on the field and actually prove that he can do so.
I think if he gets healthy, you could definitely see him start doing a little more three wide sets and maybe just run Maclin out of the slot and just have the two deep ball threats on the outside, which would probably suit Flacco a little more.
I agree. What are your thoughts on Terrence West this year?
So Terrence West, for me, I wasn't really a big believer on him last year. He did have quite a few good games down the stretch once Kenneth Dixon got hurt last year. And I think he'll still be a good running back three option, kind of a low-end running back three. You know what you're going to get. The big thing with him that's going to impact him this year is Danny Woodhead being signed by the team. I think it's going to cut into any kind of receiving role he had last year. So he'll still probably get his usual allotment of carries, but I think it definitely capped his upside.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Terrence West, especially based on how I have him ranked, and it's just tough for me to be able to get behind him. I don't see him being a great pass catcher, although he did catch 34 passes last year. I just don't see a ton of value for him coming into the season as a result of being the pass catcher. He'll be the number one running back, and he'll take some of those Kenneth Dixon rushes away, and maybe he'll be able to break 200, but I don't see him being able to break 900 yards this year. The running back I'm more interested in is Danny Woodhead, but unfortunately, Danny Woodhead, at his age and off all of the injuries, is someone that you have to still worry about. But I think that if you had to pick a wide running back to rely on that could put up consistent numbers from week to week, I think that Danny Woodhead is probably that player more so than Terrence West.
Yeah, I think he's basically done that his whole career from New England to San Diego to here. So I think you know, as long as he stays healthy, he's going to assume that similar role. And he kind of developed a little bit more into a good red zone threat in like third and short or even first and in short situations last year. So I could see Baltimore using him in the same same sort of offensive style.
Is there any tight ends on this roster that you're considering streaming in any capacity or even keeping an eye on? And if so, who is it?
Not at this point. They've kind of been decimated by injuries for tight end, and I'm not really thrilled about running, you know, Ben Watson or Max Williams out there, even Larry Donnell. It's you know, until you get one guy that actually emerges from the mess, I'm not really even bothering with it. There's other guys I like better before I have to sit here and figure out which Baltimore tight end I want.
I do think if I had to pick a tight end that will emerge from a group, I think it will be Benjamin Watson. I think he's probably got the best skill set of blocking, catching, and running after the catch at this current time. I would have liked Max Williams, but I still think he's a little bit raw, and he still needs to just get better in the NFL schemes, especially with the team. So I do think if I had to place money on someone to emerge from the group, it would be Ben Watson, but he's someone who I'm looking at only once he shows that he's able to consistently put up numbers like he did a few years ago in the Saints.
Yep.
Is the Ravens defense something that you would consider for streaming purposes at any point during this season, or are they someone that you want to see improvements from before you go with them? Because they had a decent year last year, but they didn't really make a ton of defensive improvements. And unfortunately, some of the teams that were behind them in standing did make some other defensive improvements, which may boost their value. So where do you see the Ravens' defense?
They're probably one, if I had to use them, I probably could. As a streaming option, but I'd have to probably be somewhat desperate. I think they're still kind of, yeah, everybody sees Baltimore and you think back to the defenses with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed back there that, you know, they didn't let up a lot of yards, but at the same time, they actually weren't letting up a lot of points either. You know, Baltimore, they did have a fairly decent defense on the front end as far as yardage, but you also kind of have to consider the division they play in with having both Cincinnati and Cleveland there generally don't rack up a ton of yards. I just, for me, Baltimore, if I have to use them on streaming, fine. Otherwise, I'm probably not touching them.
Fair enough. I'm in the boat where I'll stream them if it's a very good opportunity for me to be able to get some points and I don't already have a solid defense. But I think I'm going to be in the majority of people who probably gets a decent defense prior and doesn't need to go into the streaming aspect of things. Is there anything else that you want to add on the Baltimore Ravens, Eric?
Just to circle around to our hot kicker talk earlier, Justin Tucker's probably my favorite kicker, but I'll probably never get him because I'm never drafting kicker early. So
I thought you were going to go kicker first round.
Well, we could in a mock just for giggles, but I, for ones that, you know, where you play for money or anything else, I'm not touching kicker till my last pick, period.
Fair enough. All right, why don't we move into the Cincinnati Bengals, and why don't we start off talking about the running back situation. Joe Mixon is the player that looks like he's going to be the top back for the Cincinnati Bengals. Where do you expect him to be during this first season for him, and where do you expect the other running backs in Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill to finish?
So for me, I would love it if the Bengals would just start Joe Mixon and quit messing around with Jeremy Hill. Given Marvin Lewis's track record, though, I could see them continue to roll Jeremy Hill out a bit more. But you're probably going to come into the season in a situation where Jeremy Hill's the de facto starter, where he may get the first series or the first snap, and then Mixon comes in after that. Realistically, for me, he's going to be the number one option in that backfield. Gio's still going to be Giovanni Bernard is still going to be kind of that third down back option, but I fully expect Mixon to take the workload. And for me right now, he's a low end running back two consideration.
Yeah, I also have Mixon as a mid to low end running back two. I think that he has the ability, depending on what he is able to show in the first couple of games, that he could maybe move up to a higher end running back number two. But he didn't drop into draft because of his skills. He could have easily been a very early first-round pick given his skill set, but his character issues had caused him to drop in the draft. But there's no denying what skills he brings to the table, and he, I feel, is the best running back that they've had in years. And I think he complements the offense well, and I think he's going to work well for the fact that they have a very good tight end and a top-tier wide receiver.
I agree. I think realistically, he could be a three down back for him, or, you know, run a little bit more where if they need to do a two back set, they can throw in Gio just as kind of an offset, and then just to kind of give him another weapon that they can use in that offense. That, because other than the outside of AJ Green, who we'll talk about, but they really don't have a ton at the wide receiver core, so they're going to probably still need to utilize Gio pretty substantially in the passing game.
Do you think Jeremy Hill all but loses his value with Joe Mixon on board now?
He didn't have a ton last year. I did get him in a couple leagues just as kind of a late, like a RB3, RB4 last year. And realistically, he was pretty worthless till the end of the season, where basically you were hoping he'd at least get in the end zone, and that was basically it. I mean, he's hasn't averaged anything for yards per carry over the last couple years, and he's just kind of gotten into that kind of plodding kind of rushing right now, to where, you know, his yards per carry right now, the last 2 years were both under four. I think Hill's probably done, but you could probably see him kind of split that workload for the bell cow back initially.
Fair enough. I do think that Gio will hold value on basically passing downs only, and I don't expect him to have a ton of value. I still believe that Jeremy Hill will probably have more value than Giovanni Bernard, which is not saying a ton, because I don't expect either of them to have a ton of points this year. I think that is going to be severely in favor of Joe Mixon.
It should be.
What are your thoughts on Andy Dalton? Is he someone who is a quarterback two for you in most leagues, or is he someone who has the ability to work his way up into quarterback one status, or what? Where do you see him?
So for me, Dalton's barely outside of being, he's in the consideration for a quarterback two, but he's just outside my top 20 for quarterback right now. You know, he's always kind of that consistent guy, but you generally don't have a ton of upside with him. He's just a guy that if I have to settle for a low-end quarterback too, I'm fine with, but he's not a guy I'm going out of my way to try to target.
Last year he did have a good season, and considering that he did lose AJ Green for most of the second half, he did put up a good fantasy year. They didn't have a ton of other options. I mean, you had Brandon LaFell, who had a decent season, Tyler Boyd, who had a decent season, and you had Tyler Eifert, who came on and had somewhat depressing numbers, but when he was playing during the middle weeks of the season, he did play very well. It just is a shame he didn't get to play longer. I was happy with how Dalton played, but I do feel like he is a mid-tier to low-end quarterback, too, for me.
Yeah, I think for me, even though he was throwing a bunch last year. I mean, the touchdowns just aren't really there. So, you know, he's only ever hit over 25 touchdowns twice in his career. And, you know, last year he threw for over 1,000 yards than he had in the last two seasons. But he actually had the worst touchdown output of his career. Part of that's with both A.J. Green and Eifert going down. So they had to go into a little bit more of a kind of a dink and dunk ball control type offense. He's just, that ceiling for him's never really been there other than 2013. So he's not really a guy that, I don't know. I don't mind if he's my quarterback too, but I'm not super excited about it.
Yes, I'm not overly excited just like you. It would be nice to see him, but the touchdown upside is just not there like you were saying. Why don't we move into the wide receiver aspect? A.J. Green was having a phenomenal season before he got hurt last year. Is he someone who is a top five wide receiver for you, or are you going to stick with your rankings where you have him just outside of that?
I think for now, he's going to be just outside my top five. The main thing with A.J. Green, because I guess kind of for context, I've got him one spot ahead of Michael Thomas, but one spot behind Jordy. A.J. tends to have a little bit more boom potential, but the hard part with him is, you know, when you do get those games, that's usually like 5 for 132 and two touchdowns. You don't get that. And then, you know, the next week he could get shut down for something like 3 for 78, which is fine, but you don't generally have as much kind of consistency with AJ as you would with Jordy. But I think AJ's definitely got the potential to get into the top five, but I just don't see him overtaken. And my, you know, kind of in my mind, I don't see him getting much past my fifth wide receiver. And it wouldn't shock me by the end of the year if Michael Thomas wouldn't be ahead of him.
For me, I feel that A.J. Green needs to have the other weapons around him for him to be able to move into that very, very top-tier echelon. I think he's a fantastic wide receiver, but given the limitations that Andy Dalton does possess, and last year he did have a good season in terms of how many yards he had and how many interceptions he threw, but he also did have 4 rushing touchdowns, which will take away touchdowns from someone else if they do plan on making those. If they didn't turn into rushing and he made maybe thrown to A.J. Green, would that have made a significant difference? Who knows? But I don't expect Brandon LaFell to have a ton of value or take value away from A.J. Green. I think Tyler Eifert being healthy will take some of the offensive pressure off of A.J. Green. And I think if Joe Mixon comes in and is able to perform, he also will take some of the offensive pressure off, which may allow A.J. Green to have a better fantasy season than what you and I are both talking about. But we both see him as a top 8 player, and you're higher than me. You have him at number 6. I just feel that he needs to have Andy Dalton take the next step for him to be able to take the next step.
And I think adding more weapons will definitely help, just so that he's not, I mean, anytime you ever watch a Bengals game, he's basically being double covered all the time, which is part of the reason Eifert can, you know, when he's healthy, can kind of run all over the place because they're having to run a linebacker on him all the time. But, you know, AJ's always consistently getting double covered. So whether, you know, if they have to respect the run a little bit more to where they can't just have that safety roll over the top to AJ with Eifert going over the middle. And then depending what happens with, you know, John Ross, if he actually can get on the field since he's still kind of recovering from that shoulder injury. I mean, he's a guy that can go opposite that might be able to wreck a little havoc just because he is a very legitimate deep field threat to where, you know, he could take the cover off the top of it and have AJ work a little bit more underneath on things like posts and that kind of stuff to where it could open up the game a little bit more. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with that offense. They definitely have a few more weapons on it now than they've probably had AJ Green's whole career.
Do you have any interest in Brandon LaFell or Tyler Boyd at all?
Not unless it's a super deep league, but even then, no.
Fair enough. And we both have Tyler Eifert as a top seven tight end. Do we think that this is a year that he's able to stay healthy and produce those type of numbers like he did a few years ago?
You know, I think with Eifert, the big thing with him is kind of, you know, he did have back surgery in December. He's supposedly 100% healthy. I think with him, the big thing with him that you're going to bank on is kind of that red zone touchdown production. I don't see him fully replicating what he had in 2015, but I think you're probably looking at, you know, if he stays healthy the full season, you're probably looking at somewhere right around 65, 70 catches, probably about maybe 700 yards, and you could probably get 8 or 9 touchdowns out of him. But I don't. I think with where this offense may end up, you know, and he hasn't exactly been the consistency as far as health is concerned. If he does stay healthy, I fully expect him to kind of produce where we've got him. But it's kind of that risk reward with Eifert. Same thing with kind of similar player with Jordan Reed. I mean, you got, when they're on the field, they're great, but you're always running that risk with them, I think.
Fair enough. Do you have any interest in either anyone who's kicking for them or their defense at any point during this year, or you're just avoiding both situations?
I'm going to probably avoid both.
Fair enough. Why don't we move over into the Cleveland Browns? And since there's no fantasy team over there, let's move on from there.
Perfect.
The only fantasy relevant player that Cleveland really has is Isaiah Crowell. And you and I have him as a borderline to mid-tier running back too. Is there any way that he can actually duplicate what he had last year on this offense, do you think? And do you think it's relatively easy? Or do you think that he may take some of a hit because of some of the other options that they did bring into any capacity?
I think you'll probably see more of what he did last year with Crowell. I mean, really the big thing Crowell had last year, other than, you know, a little bit of increase in touchdowns, was, oddly enough, he was actually utilized a little bit more in the receiving game than he had the year before. I still think he's going to be utilized in the same function. I don't necessarily think them having, you know, more weapons, quote unquote, is going to hurt him in that capacity. I think he's actually got a little bit more chance to stay on the field than when they would sub him out for Duke Johnson, just because there's been kind of some rumors of them running Duke Johnson out of the slot. Just because after their top two wideouts, there really isn't. It's kind of a crap show at wide receiver after their top two wideouts. So I think Crowell's going to have pretty good staying power, but, and he's going to be a consistent week-to-week running back, I think, but I don't think you're going to see. He's kind of got a little bit too much steam behind him, I think, right now, where he's kind of everybody's kind of like, quote unquote, darling, I guess, as far as RB2 is concerned within the industry. But I think he'll have a solid season, and you can kind of know what to expect from him. But just being on that offense, it's going to kind of cap his potential anyway.
Yeah, I think if I was planning on drafting Crowell, I think I would need someone who I considered a very, very consistent and a very high floor running back to pair him with. I don't think I could take a chance on him paired with someone who is a high upside play, because I just don't know what we're going to get. You know, I wouldn't be totally surprised if he had a bad season because of the Browns being the Browns, but I don't expect it. I just wouldn't be surprised.
I agree.
We were talking a little bit about Duke Johnson. Do you think that he's going to have more value than what he did last year? Because last year he had some good rushes. He had 350-plus yards on 73 attempts, but he did have 53 receptions. Is he only valuable to you as a flex play in a PPR league, or do you think he may have some flex value in a standard league?
I think as far as Duke goes, I'd be more inclined to kind of take him as a potential flex in a PPR. I'm not ready to go there for a standard league just because he doesn't get that touchdown volume. He doesn't generally get more than about, you know, 8 to 10 touches a game, and I just don't think that's enough to really warrant that. But for PPR standards, I mean, he's averaged, I think, mid-50s in catches the last 2 years. You might as well, you know, if it comes to that as a flex option, I'm fine with that just from what he gives you. But you're not getting a whole lot else otherwise. Unless he actually, if he does get more roll out of the slot, especially depending whether it's Kessler or Osweiler or Deshaun Kizer back there, he's going to be a pretty decent check down option for him. So I could see him maybe getting a little uptick in value, but you kind of know what you're getting with him at this point, I think.
I concur. Who do you think will have more value this year, Brock Osweiler or David Njoku?
Is Njoku going to play quarterback?
No, but I feel like he's still more valuable as a rookie tight end than Brock Osweiler is, because Brock Osweiler does nothing to make me feel secure about his position. I mean, he was traded. He was a salary dump player. You don't see that in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically a salary dump, and as soon as they got him, the Browns were trying to trade him right off the bat, and as soon as they acquired him, I could see them maybe giving him a little bit of run just so that they don't, you know, because there was a little controversy with that trade as far as the salary dump for draft picks. But realistically, since they can't move Brock, they may give him a little bit of run, but I think it's a matter of time on this team before Deshaun Kizer takes over.
Yeah, I do think that I would rather have Kizer as a stash type player than even consider having Brock Osweiler on my team. Even if Kizer doesn't play at all this year, I think that he's someone who would perform better than what I will get from Osweiler. So,
yeah, kind of both Osweiler and Kessler at this point. I mean, they're both game managers. Well, that's probably a stretch for Osweiler. Kessler's more of a game manager. Brock can throw it away any given throw. But, you know, I don't know that they're going to give Kizer a ton of run this year. I'd like them to, just to see what they got. But at the same time, maybe they try to showcase Osweiler a little, if you can even use that word, and, you know, maybe hope somebody gets injured so they could trade him. But that contract he's got is pretty horrific, so I don't think they may be either stuck with Osweiler for a few games till they just cut him. But I think Kizer's kind of the man to watch, and he's not a guy that I'm going to draft and stash in a redraft league at all, but he's a guy I'd probably watch just to see kind of what he does, especially if he takes control as a starter, just because he's a lot better weapon than what they've got on their roster with the other three quarterbacks.
And David Njoku is someone that you're just keeping an eye on this year, right? You're not taking a deep flyer on him, even in deep leagues?
No. And I think with Njoku, with him, it's just going to be, I mean, he is a very explosive player, but if you want to follow that whole tight end narrative in the NFL, I think there's only been two in like the last 16 years that have even exceeded like 600 yards receiving their rookie year. And on that offense, I just don't see him getting a lot of work initially till he gets adjusted. He should get, he should start, but there's been a little, if you know, buzz about Seth DeValve in camp right now too. So we'll see what happens with Njoku, but he's not a guy I'm going to really do more than watch this first year in redraft leagues. Even if it's a deep one, I'll probably still, I'm not going to wait until, you know, like my mid 20 ranked tight end to try to draft him in a deep league.
All right. And what about Kenny Britt and Corey Coleman? Is there a lot of value given how bad this quarterback situation is for you, or are these guys just strictly flex plays and potential late-round keepers in a keeper-type league?
If we're looking at just straight redraft, I'm probably not. I'd probably take a shot more on Coleman just because I think he's got higher potential upside than Britt does. I mean, realistically, Britt's probably, I mean, he's their only receiver they've got that's halfway proven on that team. The big thing with Britt is he never, ever, ever, ever stays healthy. So I think with him, you know, Britt's big thing is he's a decent deep ball threat, but there's really only one, you know, Osweiler can kind of do okay with the deep ball, but I'd rather take Coleman just because of the potential upside with him, just because we haven't really gotten to see the full extent of what he can do yet, and I'd rather take a risk on him. I think if I'm, you know, looking, but realistically, both of them for me are low-end wide receiver 4, high-end wide receiver 5. I'm probably not worrying about either of them for flex potential right now.
Yeah, I concur. I think these are just bench-type players that could be totally boom or bust lottery tickets, and I think I would rather have Coleman just because I think he has a lot more that he hasn't been able to show. I think Kenny Britt's shown what he is at this point, and he had a good fantasy year last year compared to what he's had in the past. I think that there's not a lot he's able to do that would make me want to not go Corey Coleman in this situation.
And it's kind of scary to think with Kenny Britt that he hit his first 1,000-yard receiving season in his career, and it was with the Rams.
Yeah, that's a bit sad. Obviously, we're not going to be touching any defense or kicker on this team, given the lack of offensive abilities that they possess. And obviously, this is the type of team that you want to stream defenses against for the most part. So why don't we just move on from that? Why don't we move into the last team, and that's going to be talking about the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay. They have two top five draft picks in Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. Who, if you're picking one, who are you going if you have the first pick in the draft, and or second pick in the draft, because David Johnson's probably the first pick?
So if it's standard, I'm probably still going Le'Veon Bell. If it's PPR, I'll probably still lean towards Antonio Brown, but it's pretty close.
I think for me, I think I'm going Le'Veon for both, and it's just because I don't have full... That's the wrong word. I don't have full confidence that Ben Roethlisberger is able to come into the top 10 status and he's able to stay healthy for the entire season, and that they're able to play well enough that they're able to give Antonio Brown the season he had a few years ago. That did make him an easy number one player. I do think that he's an easy top five. I just think that given how well Le'Veon Bell has played, he is someone who has surpassed him even in the PPR because of the rushing and the receiving that he's able to do.
Yeah, and I could go either way in PPR. I kind of prefer Brown a little bit, but I think the big thing with me with Bell, hopefully, you know, this holdout, I think if he wasn't holding out right now, I'd probably side more with Bell. There's been a tendency sometimes where you get those players that they hold out, you know, through camp, and they're still doing, you know, workouts, of course, but he's holding out because he wants a contract. But it's usually a lot of times with those guys, even though that they're working out, it's not the same as getting in full game speed. And a lot of times those guys tend to get hurt. And Bell's had history of soft tissue issues, injuries throughout his career. So I think it's a situation that because of the holdout, I'm a little bit hesitant on him. But, I mean, really, it's not enough to where I'm going to drop him outside like my top three players either. So...
I agree. I do think that I'm going to keep him in there even with all that information. I don't see a point to really take him out because I do know when he's on the field, he's an absolute monster, and there's not a lot that's going to really be able to stop him outside of injuries. As I was saying before, I don't really see Ben Roethlisberger as a top 10 potential option. I do have him currently outside of my top 10. He just hasn't been able to give that top 10 status, and the quarterback depth in most leagues is just so deep that it doesn't make sense to go with someone like Ben who doesn't possess a ton of upside. Yes, he is getting Martavis Bryant back. He has Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, but you know, he doesn't possess really any rushing ability. The likelihood that he gets rushing touchdowns is very slim. He would need like 35-plus touchdowns just for me to be able to consider him, just because he is someone who probably won't play all 16 games. And even if he does play in all 16, I'm sure he'll play hurt through at least one or two of those. So it makes it tough to be able to rely on Ben Roethlisberger. Do you disagree?
No, I don't with Roethlisberger. And kind of the more he's kind of advanced throughout his career, you're starting to get a lot more pronounced difference between his home game production and his road game production too. So if you get a stretch in there, especially towards like the tail end of the season when you're trying to make your championship run and, you know, 4 or 5 games are away out of the last 8, it can really kind of hamper your potential just because for whatever reason, when he plays away, he just doesn't do as well.
He's poop.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think with Roethlisberger, because of that, and just because, you know, the kind of where he is in his career, I mean, if I was the last player to take a quarterback in a standard 10 or 12 team and he was the last man standing, fine, I'll run with it. But otherwise, there's probably other options I'm going to favor over him at this point.
Is he someone that you're considering possibly... Is he someone that you're considering platooning with another quarterback when he plays at home? Because over the past 3 years, and this stat is from RotoWire, he has a 59-16 touchdown to interception mark, and he's third in fantasy points when he plays at home. During that same time frame, he's got 23 touchdowns to 22 interceptions, and is 18th in fantasy points in 22 road games. So obviously he's someone who just is not able to get going on the road, just like you said. I feel like if I had Roethlisberger, he's someone that I'm looking to platoon with when he's on the road, but then I'm wasting 2 roster spots on quarterback, and that's not necessarily how I want to go into week one. What about you?
Yeah, I'm not getting into a situation where I want to platoon guys. I mean, if in a standard league, there's no need to draft 2 quarterbacks. So I think for me, if I get Roethlisberger, I'm probably running him out just week to week and hoping for the best. But I'm not going to waste another roster spot trying to roll him out a different quarterback on an away game. There's just it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Fair enough. The last player I wanted to talk about on Pittsburgh is Martavis Bryant. Where do you see Martavis coming into the season? Do you see him as a top 30 wide receiver?
If he gets reinstated, which he should, but for some reason they're still holding him back. Apparently he hasn't satisfied everything the league's wanted him to do. He's basically practicing and he can play in preseason, but that's about it for now. I think with Bryant, he's got the upside definitely, and we've seen it in the past when he is on the field. He's such a legitimate deep threat for that team. I think he's got the capability, if he's healthy and stays on the field, to probably be a good wide receiver 3 option. So currently I've got Martavis. Yeah, he's mid, basically wide receiver 3 for me right now. So I think I'm, if I have him, I'd rather have him as kind of that wide receiver three or bench depth. But he's definitely got a fairly high ceiling just because he does have that big play capability. But he's kind of never been the model of consistency either. So he's kind of one of those guys that you throw in and hope for the best for that week to week. And he can definitely win you the week. But and he's a guy, too, that hasn't really been tied as much to having Ben Roethlisberger on the field. He's excelled too when Roethlisberger's been off the field. So he's a guy I'd probably look for as just as a high upside bench or wide receiver three.
Yeah, for me, I have him as a low end wide receiver three to a mid tier wide receiver three rather than a flex play. I think in a solid or in a three wide receiver league, he's someone who you could look on as probably a flex play more than anything, because it's tough to say if you'll be able to get an entire season of production out of him. But I think that he's someone that if you have three wide receivers already, it's worth taking a flyer on him, because he's someone who can be such a runaway talent. And that's not me trying to make a bad pun or anything, but he just has so much skill, and we have seen what he's able to do when he's on the field. It's similar to what Josh Gordon does when Josh Gordon is on the field. He's able to get breakaway catches. He's able to score touchdowns. He's able to make defenses have to worry about him. And when you have Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant all in the fold, all playing well, it's a scary thing for defenses, and someone is going to break through every single week, and you know that Antonio and Le'Veon have such consistent floors. I think that sometimes it will hurt Martavis's value a little bit, which is why I have him where I do.
Yeah, and I think he's a guy too, and you know, this is probably something we'll discuss a little later. I may do a write-up on it. He's definitely a guide target if you're playing in a best ball league. He's a great boom bust option for those formats.
I agree. Is there anyone else that you want to talk about in this division at all?
Actually, the more I've kind of just thought about it while we've been talking, I think I probably do agree with you that I'm going Le'Veon Bell over AB in both. In PPR, the more I think about it. So, even with the injury thing, I'd rather take a risk on the fact that he may or may not get injured versus, you know, Roethlisberger getting knocked out or playing hurt than Antonio's loses so much value when Roethlisberger's not on the field, that's probably more of a risk than potential soft tissue issue.
Good to know. I'm glad that you're listening to me. I think that's a very smart decision.
First time for everything, huh?
Exactly. Why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on, Eric?
So I can be reached on Twitter at Mackey671FWFB. And I honestly am not sure what I'm going to write about next. But I'm working on the football podcast with you and Evan Peterson and Donnie Miller, and then also somewhere in there we'll probably have to do a basketball one too.
Yeah, you can find me on the Tuesday Baseball Show with Evan Peterson and Chuck Anderson. You can find me during the off season and once the season starts back up for basketball with Eric Mackey. And Eric and Evan and I will be doing the Wednesday night football show. We will be joined by Donnie Miller, just like Eric was saying. Outside of that, I'm not working on much else, but it's going to be an exciting time because I miss football season, and we're getting right down to the thick of things for baseball, so I'm looking forward to everything. So, until next time, have a great football off season, everyone.